tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
What up, fam? How you guys doing? Great. I'm super excited to be here this morning. I'm super excited to continue this series because this series challenges me as a speaker. Because entitled hashtag No Fear October, I thought it was incredibly disingenuous to you guys if I was to step up on the stage and to talk about fear and not talk about my fear. Because I think a lot of times when we talk about fear and we talk about like the fears that we have in our life, people always talk about their fears at the end. Like we always hear people who talk about like starting companies, like and people that run big businesses, when they talk about like the fear they had for starting their giant business, we always hear about it when they're already super successful. It's really hard to listen to Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, talk about the risk he had investing $200 million in the Cowboys. I'm like, yeah, that was hard to have a $4 billion industry, Jerry. I know that was difficult for you. But like for me and for us, we don't get to always see the end result. We're always not like at the point where we've made it. And I think it's sometimes we have to talk about our fears in the moment. And I think right now, when I think about the biggest fear I have, I think about uncertainty. And I think about when I'm making decisions and when I'm uncertain of the results. Because I'm very willing to take a risk. If I know the odds, if you come to me and say, okay, I have a 50% chance of this happening, a 50% chance of this happening, I am more than willing to make a decision. Where I am not willing to make a decision and when fear really sets into my life is when I have no idea the outcome of what I'm about to do. And sometimes you have to make decisions that you don't know the outcome of. And sometimes you have to make them a lot. And I think a lot of times in the church we have to make those decisions. Because as Christians, God calls us to do things that are out of the norm. He calls us to reach out to people. He calls us to give more money than to the church. And sometimes when we're sitting in a church pew, it's hard to be like, that's what I want to do. Give all my money and not know where my next meal is coming from. That sounds like fun. Or reach out to my friend who might reject me. That's what I want to do and try to bring them to church. But God sometimes calls us to those uncertain moments. And so I want to talk about uncertainty today and the fear of uncertainty. Because I've had a lot of uncertainty in my life. When I was 22, I was blessed and given a position as a youth pastor at my home church. I had grown up at this church my entire life. I had gone to college. I was getting my master's. And at 22, they said, here, Chris, we're going to make you the youth pastor. You're going to run this group of organization. And for me, that was a huge deal because it was everything that I thought that I wanted in my life. From a young age, there was talk in the church. They're like, we want to raise up the next leaders in our church. And I was one of those people that had been chosen to, like, we want to invest in you. We want to spend time with you. So I always met with the pastors. And I was going through a process of becoming the next youth pastor. And the youth pastors at this church have become the senior pastors. The other two youth pastors that had been at this church were still on staff. One of them was the lead pastor. The other one is currently the lead pastor of that church. So I saw my future, and I was set. Going forward, I was going to be a lead pastor. I was going to marry the girl in the church, who I didn't end up marrying. But we were going to move forward, and me and my friends that had grown up in this church were going to eventually take this church over, and it was going to be mine. And I saw that plan, and it was set before me. But then something changed. Within the first few months, I started getting this feeling. I started hearing this idea in the back of my head that this isn't the end for you. This isn't right for you. You have something more planned. And so I did what anyone would do, and I just shoved that feeling down. Just deep down inside of me. But it kept coming back. And it kept coming back. And I very quickly realized that this plan that I had set for my entire life, where my life was going, where I was going to be a pastor, what I was going to do for the next 40 years, was not the plan. And everything was set to go this one way, and all of a sudden, I realized I have no idea where I'm going. And I have no idea what God has for me. And it scared me. And I froze. And so when I was there, and in that fear, I just stopped, and I didn't want to do anything. And I had no idea where I was going. I had no idea. I didn't want to make any decisions about my life, because anything I did was going to lead me farther away from the plan that I had for myself, and the plan that I had been told that was my plan, and the one that everyone had spoken into me for years, and that wasn't it, and I knew it. And I had no idea what to do. And then I remember I was teaching my students, and I came across the story in the Bible that I ended up preaching on within the sermon series I was doing, and it was this guy named Gideon. And Gideon has a very interesting story, and I think it really pertained to that fear I had, and it really helped me learn a lot about my fear of the uncertain and what God had for me. So I want to tell you guys about this story, and I want to kind of finish my story and kind of tell you how I got through this fear of uncertainty. So together, I would like us all to stand. We're going to read a verse from the Bible. This is going to be the main verse I use. We're going to stand just to show honor to our text of the Bible. So it's Judges 6:12. It says, "When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.'" Let's pray real quick. Dear God, I thank you for this day. I thank you for everyone that's come. I ask that you bless them, you bless the words that I speak, and let them not be held back by the fear of uncertainty. Amen. You guys can be seated. Cool. So you read this line about Gideon, a man who's a mighty warrior to the Lord. And that's what this angel says to him, that he's a mighty warrior. Now, when I think of a mighty warrior, my ideas are pretty set by our culture. We have a lot of movies that show like mighty warriors and like people that know kung fu and are really like have a lot of courage. I'll say it like that. But we have like this idea of what a mighty warrior is, and it's not like really up for debate. People aren't arguing, you know who's a mighty warrior? Tax attorneys. You know, like, no, we have this idea that the people that go in guns blazing and save the girl and have the ripped shirt for some reason. We have our ideas of what mighty warriors are. But if we bring some context to who Gideon was and the story around him, we see everything that is not a mighty warrior. You go to the next slide, we'll go through some things. I'm going to cover a lot of Bible verses in this series, so just like, I put the notes in YouVersion if you want to check them out, but I'm just going to kind of hit some highlights because I have too many verses to go through. But if we look at some context, right when this angel came to God, or came to Gideon and was telling him that he's a mighty warrior, what we have is we have Gideon right before is hiding in a wheat press. He's hiding in this place and doing a job because there's an army that is going against the people of God. The Jewish people that God has blessed, they're being attacked by these armies from the east. And they're so scared that people are going to come destroy their farms and are going to take their cities that all the people are just hiding. And Gideon is hiding with them. And while Gideon is hiding, he's praying to God to do something to fix the situation. He's saying, like, Lord, why are you letting this happen to your people? You said we were blessed. We said we were yours. Why are you letting us be taken over by these other armies? And so that's when the angel comes to Gideon and tells him, you're a mighty warrior. God has set you apart. I need you to go and destroy these armies. You're going to be the leader in going and doing this. And the first thing Gideon does when he hears that comment, he's like, well, not me, because, you know, my father's house, we're the weakest house in our tribe. And our tribe is the worst tribe of all the tribes that exist. And me, I'm the least of my father's house. So I'm the least of the least of the least. So there's no possible way it's me. And then the angel keeps talking to him, and the angel performs a miracle in front of him. And as soon as Gideon sees this miracle happen, he suddenly starts screaming and realizing, oh my gosh, this is an angel. The Lord's going to kill me. So everything we see about Gideon is not a mighty warrior. It's a little chicken. And we see this, like, he goes into, like, everything that is being told to him. It's just like, nope, I can't do that. Nope, I don't have the courage to do that. Nope, I'm just a little tiny person. You can't, like, it's not me, it's not me, it's not me. But Gideon does eventually get the courage to, like, God says, no, I'm going to be with you. It's going to be okay. We're going to go do this. So Gideon actually goes and he destroys an idol of one of the gods of these armies that are attacking the Jewish people. And when he destroys it, people realize, hey, someone's standing up to these armies. Someone's going to lead us. And they're like, who is it? And they realize it's Gideon. They're like, oh, great. We're going to join you. And then this huge army comes around Gideon. They're like, we're going to go, and we're going to go fight these people. Well, the armies that have been attacking realize, hey, these people are attacking our gods. They're trying to fight against us. So they all join together, and these huge armies that were working separately now join together and are like, all right, we're going to go take out these people once and for all. So now what we're having is Gideon, this little scared chicken, is now suddenly the leader of an army and is now facing another army, and they're about to go into battle. And as Gideon is marching towards this eventual battle, he starts to question himself, and his fear sets back in. And he's like, you know, God, I don't think this is really what you want me to do. I don't think this is really what we should be doing here. So he's like, I got an idea. He's like, God, he's like, if this is your plan for my life, if this is really what you want for me, I'm going to take this sheep's wool, and I'm going to set it down. And in the morning, when I wake up and walk out of my tent, if the sheep's wool is dry and all of the ground is wet from dew, he's like, I know it's your plan. So Gideon goes to bed, he wakes up, he steps out. That's exactly what happens. The ground's wet, the wool is dry, and he goes, you know, God, that could have just happened by accident. So I'm going to need you to do that again, but reverse it. I need the sheep's wool to be wet and the ground to be dry. That way, I got you, man. We're good. I know it's you. So goes to sleep, wakes back up, same thing happens. And Gideon's like, dang it. And so because he does not want to do this. He's so fearful. But then he goes, okay, let's keep going. And he keeps going, and he's starting to head towards the battle. And when he's getting closer to the battle, when they're getting closer to this fight, God speaks to Gideon. And he goes, Gideon, he's like, listen, you've got too many people. Your army is too big. Your army is so big, in fact, that if you go into battle against these armies, you will absolutely win. And we can't have that, because people need to be understanding that it's me giving you the victory, not the size of your army. So send your army home. And he's like, and those that stay, those are the ones we'll use. So Gideon gets up, and he's like, hey, if you don't want to be here, you can go ahead and leave. And like half the army leaves. And then God goes, nope, still too many people. I need you to shrink it down. And he shrinks it down again. And it gets to the point where God gives him a sign through how people drink water of who he should take. And he realizes that God has given him now, from a giant army that could absolutely defeat his enemy, he's given him 300 men. And God's like, perfect, just what I need. Let's keep going. And so Gideon, of course, terrified, is just dreading walking into this battle, dreading walking forward and keep fighting this battle. But he still goes, and then all of a sudden, one night, he wakes up because God's like, Gideon, now, we're going to attack. And Gideon's like, I don't really want to. And he goes, it's okay. He's like, if you're still scared, he's like, I've got the plan. He's like, we're going to win. He's like, but if you're still scared, he's like, I've got a sign for you. Sneak into the camp, and I'll have a sign for you. So Gideon, being super fearful, sneaks into the camp because he wants the sign from the Lord. So Gideon, as he sneaks in, he hears this conversation between two soldiers of the enemy forces. And he hears them talking, and one of them says, I had a dream last night. And the other one starts listening to his story, and he interprets the dream. He's like, that dream is from God. And what God is saying is that Gideon's going to beat us in battle. So Gideon hears that story, sees another sign from God, and then goes back to his men and said, okay, we're going to attack tonight. Here's the plan God's given me. We're going to break up into three groups. You guys go that way, you guys go that way, and you guys stay with me. We're going to attack from all three sides, and we're going to sneak into the camp. And when we sneak in, we're going to have torches hidden under pots, and we're going to have our trumpets with us. And when we get in the middle of the camp, I'll make a signal. We'll all break the pots to show our light, and then blow into our trumpets and make tons of noise. And everyone's like, that's a terrible idea. He's like, just trust me, we're going to do it. But so they sneak into this camp. They sign that off, and then this is what it says in the Bible in Judges 7:22. It says, when the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. Because this army was made up of so many different groups, and this army was so large, this army actually spoke a lot of different languages. And these armies were led by different men. So in the middle of the night, when they all woke up, hearing trumpets and seeing torches, they're like, oh my goodness, we're under attack. And they all run outside with their swords, see that there's people speaking different languages holding other swords, and just attack them. And then Gideon and their men just kind of slowly creep back into the darkness and watch this army destroy each other. Now, that's an amazing story, and God has clearly done great things. But why the heck is Gideon a mighty warrior before the Lord? He didn't even do anything. He was scared the entire time. And every time it says that something happens, it's just God doing stuff. He doesn't even fight in the battle. It's like he just walks up, blows a trumpet, and runs away. I have never seen our military use the symbol of a trumpet player sitting there heroically as like, that's our hero. That's our leader who's going to take us into battle. What the heck did Gideon do? He was just dragged through the entire thing. God was just like, come on, we're going. He's like, no, I don't want to. He's like, shut up, we're doing this. He's like, blow a trumpet. Come on, we're going back. And God just drags him through the situation as Gideon cries and weeps and moans and fears. So why is Gideon a mighty warrior? And I sat and thought about this for a long time, especially when I was younger and I had a lot of fear about leaving my church. Why is Gideon a mighty warrior? He's not doing anything. Well, the only two things that Gideon did is he was there and he took some steps forward. And that's all that God needs. God just wants us to be there. And I think sometimes we make it so confusing. We make it we have to do a million things, and we make it we have to do these grand gestures. And if you read this story, Gideon didn't do anything. Gideon was just there, and he was terrified the entire way. He had no faith in what was going to happen. He was unsure of himself. He didn't think he was a great person, but he said, okay, I'll just take the next step. Okay, I'll just take the next step. And God did an amazing thing through Gideon, and now he's memorized for all time through the Bible. And I think that goes to our big idea of the day, is that overcoming fear is just by taking the next step. It has nothing to do with being a great person. It has nothing to do with your knowledge, because all of that stuff comes from God anyway. Anything we've ever done is just coming from God. So Gideon didn't need any of those skills. Gideon didn't need to be a great fighter. God didn't need a huge army to defeat these other armies. God just needed someone to be there and blow a trumpet. And when I was 22 and set to be a pastor of this church, I thought I was a great person. I thought I was a mighty warrior. I had all the strength. I could do all these great things. And then I realized that wasn't God's plan for me. I wasn't meant to be here. I needed to walk away. And I was fearful. And I didn't want to move. And I didn't want to do what God had planned for me. And I froze. And then God told me again and again, you need to keep moving. This isn't the place for you. This isn't right. And I said, okay, God, I'm going to take the first step. And I took a step. And I talked to my wife. And I said, Lauren, I think God's calling me somewhere else. I don't think we're supposed to be at this church forever. And she said, can we survive without your salary? And I said, we have a solid 9 days. And then she said, let's go, because that's what God's called you to, because my wife's awesome. And so I talked to my wife, and then me and her start having our conversation. And then I start talking to my mentors and to my family, and I tell them, I need to go. This isn't right for me. I need to step out. And they said, and some of them didn't agree. They said, you have such a good job. This is exactly what you've wanted forever. But other ones said, I see the call of God in you. You need to go. And then I talked to my pastor, and I ended up leaving. And the next week, I walked into a different church, and I knew no one. I'd never met a single person that went to that church. The only reason I went there is because two of my friends who were then in Australia said, hey, you might like this place. And then I saw the pastor, pretty old guy. He was wearing a weird graphic t-shirt. And he was up there talking about dragons or something. And I remember at the end of his sermon, he says, what are you doing to fulfill the purpose that God has in your life? And I left that service and I just cried. And I said, God, why would you take me away from the job I wanted to do, something you told me my entire life, to then bring me to this other church that's not looking for a youth pastor? Why would you take me here when I know no one? All of my contacts are in other places. God, this makes no sense. And then I kept coming. And I make that next step, and I joined a group. And I met this really cool girl named Amber. And she said, hey, you should come work with our students. And then I took a next step, and I worked with the students. And then some horrible things happened to Amber, and Rob said, hey, I need you. I need your help. I need you to come and work with us a little bit with the students. We don't have anyone else. And I took another step. And then 6 months later, I took another step, and I stood up on the stage, and I preached my first sermon to you guys. And then a few months later, I preached the next one. And then I kept meeting with Rob and talking with Rob, and Rob says, we want you with our students, I want you on the staff, I like you, we're friends, we need to go do what God has for us, and it's here. And 2 years after I left my church, having no idea what I was supposed to do, being petrified of leaving my church, I am now a student pastor, exactly where I'm supposed to be, preaching my third sermon. And I don't say any of this to talk about how great I am. It's not about me. I'm real dumb, I promise. I was just taking the steps that God had in front of me. And it was terrifying. And there were some nights where I was up all night, just petrified in fear, not able to sleep. And my wife would come out to our living room and say, "Why are you awake? Why haven't you been asleep?" And I said, "I have no idea what to do. I'm so scared." It was hard. It was difficult. I had no direction. It was a total shift in my mind. But God was there every step of the way. And in all that uncertainty, where all that fear existed, God just said, "I just need you to take the next step. I just need you to do the next thing. I just need you to walk forward a little tiny bit. We don't have to be here yet. I just need you here. So you just need to keep walking forward." And I love this story of Gideon because it just reminds me that it's not about my greatness. It's not about what I can do. It's just about taking the next step. There's a woman in the Catholic Church. She's a saint. She's known as Thérèse of Lisieux. When she was 14, she had a call from God. God said, she saw her sisters were becoming nuns, and she said, "That's what I want to be. God, you've called me to that. I'm going to go on the mission field, and I'm going to work for you." And in the church back then, you could only be a nun at 16. You had to be 16. And her dad was going to see the Pope, because the Pope was coming to town. And she said, "Dad, take me with you." And as she goes up, she walks up to the Pope and says, "Listen, you need to change the rules of the Catholic Church, because I need to be a nun right now." And he said, "If it's meant to be, it's meant to be." And when someone heard that she was talking so boldly to the Pope like that, her local priest realized there's something in her. She needs to be a nun. And he let her into the convent. And then she starts her training for 2-3 years and gets her habit and takes all her vows. And right before she's supposed to leave and go work on the mission field in Thailand, she wakes up with blood in her mouth and is diagnosed with tuberculosis. And she says, "I can't go on the mission field." And she cries at night, contemplates suicide, because everything she's known, everything she thought she was supposed to be, is gone. But she says, "There's something I can do still. I may not be able to go on the mission field. I can't do all the heavy labor that everyone else can do, but I can do the little things. I can do the little things around the convent." So she picked up a broom, and she swept the building. And they gave her a title of, like, head broom mistress. And then all of a sudden she says, "We need to take care of our flowers outside because first impressions matter." So she learned how to take care of flowers, and she did all the gardens. And when she got in arguments with other nuns, and when she got in arguments with the priest, when they went to dinner, she would purposely sit by the people that no one else wanted to sit by, and sit by the angrier people or people she was fighting with, because community was important. And she wrote a book that thousands of people read, and she has this quote, and I love it, and it says, "Holiness consists simply in doing God's will, in being just what God wants us to be." And she knew she couldn't do all the great things. She couldn't do the things that she had planned on. She couldn't be a great savior, but she could do the little things. She could take those little steps and just help Christianity grow in just those little tiny ways. She died at the age of 24 from her disease. No one mourned her, just the people around her and the few members of her family that were around. No one knew her name. It wasn't written about in papers. It wasn't known throughout the land. 10 years later, she was made a saint in the Catholic Church because her story was so great, because people said, "She does the little things, and the little things matter." After that, she was named a doctor of the faith by the Pope, one of only 3 women to ever get that title. And the reason was not because she was amazing, not because she was great, because she was taking the little steps to do the little things to help build God in this world. So today's win. What are you doing to take your next step for God? Take your next step for God today in your life. Some of you might have been in the church your entire life. Some of you might have been here forever since this place started. Maybe your jump is a little bigger than others. Maybe your step is to start running some of our groups. Maybe it's to be a leader of some volunteer teams. Maybe this is your first day ever walking into a church. Maybe you just want to walk over to the meet and greet and see what we're about. Maybe you want to just come back next week and hear the rest of the series. Maybe you're somewhere in between. Maybe you need to start looking into baptism for the church. Maybe you need to look at some of these Make a Difference programs we did. Maybe you need to volunteer and commit yourself to a full year of volunteer service in our kids or our students programs. But there's a step out there for you to take. Everyone has a step. No one's finished. And I encourage you, even if you're scared, even if you have no idea what the future is holding, even if you are just petrified because it doesn't make sense why everything in your life just changed, just take the next step. And it will lead you to God's plan in your life. Let's pray. Dear God, I thank you for every person here, and I thank you for the plan that you have in their life. God, it is so hard to not know. It is so difficult to just not understand what the future holds. But God, you have a plan. You've seen it. You've said it. I ask that you just help us all take that next step. Just walk a little bit forward to go to the next level and the next level so we can fulfill your plan in this world, God. I thank you. I thank you for everyone here. And I ask you just, you push us to take the next step.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.